There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
You all know me. You know what I do for a living. I watch movies. This movie you've got, it's a big one. Bigger than you know. Movie like the original Jaws, swallow you whole. A little shaking, a little tenderizing, and down you go. I'll watch it for 3,000 bumpy bucks, but I'll review it and podcast it for 10. Surprise! We're disrupting our current series to bring you the last installment of our interrupting cow of a series, Summer Blockbusters and Summer Not.
Who is that?
Mike, it was me, Max.
No, so, the beginning part.
That was my flawless Robert Shaw impression.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Captain Squint.
Yep. It's because of all the fish he eats.
Yep. So let's face it. We didn't have a choice. This year is the 50th anniversary, 5-0, of the first true summer blockbuster, Steven Spielberg's Teeth. No, crap, Jaws. It also, by a staggering coincidence, happens to be our 350th episode. Oh, yeah. Something we totally planned. So you
actually,
can see...
I hadn't even noticed.
Nope. We kind of had to do it. I am your host, Max, the tasseled woebegone shark, Levine. And tasseled. Floating nearby is your other host, Mike, the blobfish loose. Employ your anti-predator mechanism, Mike.
Blah, 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 blah.
Close enough. But before we go back to the ocean, we have our poll question.
Poll question.
We wanted to know, is there a director whose films you just can't stand? You see his name and you're, nope. And if so, why? And if not, why not? Nick Hoffman leads off with, ooh, such a rich minefield. I think you're mixing your metaphors there a tad, Nick, but okay. I'm going with Michael Bay.
Oh.
Well, minefield is a kind of bomb, so sure. Aaron Perez says, Pamela Anderson. No, sorry, Wes Anderson.
Oh. Wow.
His early films are some of my favorites, but now he's just a parody of himself. Ouch.
You know, I can kind of see what he's talking about.
I've heard people say that.
He's very a specific flavor. Mm. It's like you're only allowed, like, Strawberry Quick. And it's like, oh, I love Strawberry Quick. And then after a week, you're like, it's still Strawberry. Can I have some? No, you can't.
Yeah, and in fact, we're going to double the amount of Strawberry Quick and put it into a big pink glass that says Strawberry Quick on the side.
It's always that flavor of a Carnation Instant Breakfast that you leave to last because you don't really want it.
Exactly. Yep, yep. Taking time out from his curation of his invention, the Tatum.
There isn't any such thing.
Aha! Yes, there is.
No, there isn't.
I have been waiting for you to say that because thanks to the efforts of one of my spies, a.k.a. the Wheeze, he sent me a Wikipedia entry about the Tatum.
Which has nothing to do with any of the things you've said he invented up till this point.
Because I'm respecting his privacy and I don't want all those crazed fans after him. The Tatum is a feature of music that is generally defined as the smallest time interval between successive notes in a rhythmic phrase. Ha ha, ha ha ha.
That is
game,
not an
set,
invention.
Blandford.
Yes, Mr. Blandford wins, you don't.
Yep, yep. So, as I say in triumph, there are no directors whose entire body of work I hate, but there are some who I've come to distrust so much that I avoid. They start a film strong but can't land it, or suck at using music, or make terrible editing choices, or who become so enthralled with their own that it bogs down the movie. Had moments, but lost me. Michael Bay, Joel Schumacher, Zack Snyder, no, the Snyderverse... And I'll get hate for these, but Spike Lee can't get out of his own brilliant way. Ron Howard, his best films are fine, certainly competent, but never has anything really to say. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Chris Chris Columbus, see Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And Scorsese. I'll never, ever forgive him for The Irishman, and someone needs to introduce him to more women. Okay, that part's fair. Actually, more actors, period. Ooh. But I'll also freely admit that all of these people have done vastly more than I have. Wow!
Well,
that's a hand grenade in the chicken coop.
It's a very interesting. Here's the thing. We don't have to agree with anybody, but I can also see in a lot of the cases his point. Spike Lee, to be fair, I've only seen one of his films. I can't really comment on that. Ron Howard, the idea of him not having anything to say, you know, I think Ron does some really good big blockbustery type films, and he, you know, they make some very enjoyable and a lot of fun. If you asked me, what does Ron Howard trying to say to us? I don't know that I would know either. So thanks, Richard. That's some really interesting stuff.
Yeah. Keith Wright says, M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong. And that is what he wrote. It's not my commentary. He's made some good films, but he's so enamored of his twists that he sometimes doesn't make a coherent film.
Sometimes?
Everyone, if you haven't seen The Happening, please don't. What? No. I'm not eyeing your lemon drink. You'll never get those hours back.
Is that the wind one or the water one?
That was The Evil Trees. Run! It's the trees are attacking.
Tree farts make me commit suicide.
Okay. I was also angry at his superhero trilogy. I liked Unbreakable and Split. Yeah, those are good. And then he finished it up with Glass. Yeah. How are you going to mess up a superhero supervillain movie because you need to put in a damn twist? You forgot to write the rest of the movie. There were so many good actors, and he wasted them. Yeah, I right there with you, Keith. Glass was really disappointing.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Tyler Stewart says, David Lynch is not my cup of tea as a general rule. Well, then don't try to immerse him in boiling water. Again. I did like Blue Velvet and most of Twin Peaks, but I've never understood the appeal of Eraserhead.
Me either.
And Dune was such a disappointment.
Yep.
Yeah, I will kill him and stuff. I've avoided his movies for the last 30 years.
Yeah, those are the only two films of his I've seen, so.
Seen a couple of others. Some of them are very good. They're just very weird.
Yeah.
Tony Kellner says, never been a Francis Ford Coppola fan. I know he's good, but I don't enjoy his work. Hey, this is the guy who gave us Megala. Okay, never mind.
Well, to be fair, let's see. How many strong women characters have there been in Francis Ford Coppola films?
Hang on.
Wait, Sofia Coppola was in that one Godfather's film.
No, she wasn't.
Yes, she was.
There was no such film. It doesn't exist. Shut up.
Other than that, let's see.
Not a lot.
Nope.
Not a lot. Charles Forsyth says, I think it comes down to, would I watch a movie by this director?
Yeah.
Michael Bay is generally a no, except for maybe Bad Boys, which was a seminal movie for 1990s buddy cop films. I'd watch that.
Okay.
Uwe Boll, is a solid can't stand.
Yeah.
In 2009, he made a few movies where he really tried, but there's not a lot pushing me to check them out. Boll's work is just bad, and not in the Neil Breen way. Who?
I did not have to look him up, too.
Where I have to watch it just to gawk at the badness.
Mm.
Boll became the go-to director for bad video game to film adaptations. Hey, looking at you, Blood Rain.
Yeah.
He benefited from a German tax break for investing in movies. The law allowed you to write off money you invested in a film, even if you made the money back.
Wow.
It's a have your cake and eat it too opportunity. This sounds a little like the plot for The Producers. In order to get the full benefit of this law, you need to invest in a film that was just successful enough to pay back your investment.
Wow.
Oh, brother.
Man, I mean, you got to admit that that's a Roger Corman level of skill, right? Okay, we need to make a movie that only this many people will see.
This exact amount of money. Stand outside and like, okay, enough people have gone into the movie. Go away. You don't go away.
Yeah, he's no Phil Tucker, that's for sure.
Seth Jacobs wrote Miranda July. Don't know her. Her films are pretentious and insufferable. I've said it many times on Facebook, I think Christopher Nolan is the most overrated director on the planet.
Wow.
Huh. You really believe that, Seth? Swear to me! He just doesn't trust his audience. Every time something important is occurring on screen, he feels the need to jog our elbows by amping up the blood and thunder background music until it threatens to drown out the dialogue. Ooh, he's not wrong.
Huh.
Wow.
That's coming.
That's two for Chris Nolan.
Yeah. Two or and three course, for Michael Bay.
And of course, from the lands of snow and winter, where they raised film directors only to feed them to the walruses, Vince says, most directors are hit and miss, but Michael Bay is all miss for me. I don't think I like any of his movies. I don't think I ever think Michael Bay. You know, in Michael Bay, I won't watch it, but more, I don't want to see that and then learn it's Michael Bay. Jack Snyder isn't a draw either. I checked. He meant Zack Snyder, who is, in fact, Jack Snyder's evil twin. It explains a lot, doesn't it?
Who's Jack Snyder?
He's the good twin.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what has he made? Nothing.
Oh, he doesn't do movies. He works in penguin rehabilitation. And now, strap in, because it's that loquacious Irish lad, Bill O'Lading.
Oh, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
First off, I refuse to see Woody Allen or Roman Polanski films. I can't think why.
Yeah. What do they have in common?
Both have been credibly accused of rape. Allen, his stepdaughter, Dylan Farrow, and Polanski, a 13-year-old actress that he confessed to California prosecutors of drugging first.
Yay.
Polanski even accepted a plea bargain, but then fled the United States and has remained a fugitive from justice in France, Poland, and Switzerland for the past 47 years.
Yep.
These two have talent, without doubt, but it is a damning indictment of cinema that any studio will continue to use their services, much less insure them.
Yeah.
In terms of actual film quality, George Lucas. Surprise?
No.
Would you believe that it's like a bag of rock salt? Would you believe
Would
that
you
the
like
man
some ice cream?
Actually only has 6 directorial credits to his name?
Yes,
I do believe that. THX 1138, American Twice. Graffiti, Star Wars 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah. Huh. To be fair, THX was made twice. He did it as a student film, and then it was actually somehow greenlit by his studio and released.
Lucas produced all the rest of the works with which he is associated. American Graffiti is a masterpiece, and Star Wars A New Hope, doubly so. But Lucas was saddled with low budgets back then and made some smart choices out of necessity. It made for amazing storytelling and two of the best films of the 70s. Star Wars 1, 2, and 3, the prequels, I assume, they are stinkers. They just are.
Yep.
Lucas got so wrapped around the axle of his own gravitas. That's a nice turn of phrase. I like that. The man got high on his own supply. It was forgotten that cinema needs to tell stories first and be spectacle second. Yes. Horrible dialogue, wooden acting, inexplicably bad side characters, Jar Jar Binks, poor choices that erase all suspense. It's a wonder that Greedo didn't shoot himself to ensure he didn't have to be in a Lucasfilm any longer than necessary.
Well, maybe later he will.
It's no mystery why Lucas has not directed since 2005. There were no more yes men left. Beam me up, Scotty!
Yeah, he sold them to Disney.
That's right. Yeah. You look kind of sad. And the light is blinking. My heart is thumping.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes, yes. That light breaking from the west. Doris Hempelmeyer.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. I sure did miss you guys last week. There was something wrong with Monday because there was no Max Mike Movies. Anyway, I'm here to answer your poll question for this week, which happens to be, is there a director whose films you just can't stand? And boy, is there. One in particular, and I just don't like anything he's done. I think he's violent. I think he's, I don't know, he's just a jerk to me. And that's Quentin Tarantino. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there who's going to say, what are you talking about? But I'm sorry. I just don't like his violence. I just don't like his attitude. I don't like anything about him. So that is my answer. Thank you for having Max Mike Movies back on this week. I am so excited to hear the new episode, and I will be looking forward to hearing it next week. Bye.
Okay, Tarantino. I know he's not a lot of people's cup of tea. That's fair. I enjoy a lot of his stuff, but I know he, you know, he just makes people's fingers itch for a baseball bat.
It's his fault.
What about you, Mike? Who's that one director who just makes you go, no.
Man, I hate to come right after Doris. Quentin Tarantino. Cannot stand it. And the sad thing is that the earlier films of his I saw by mistake because I didn't know who he was. Uh-huh. And they were at friends' house and they were like, hey, let's watch this film. And afterwards, I'm like, wow, that was brutal and just unpleasant. Who made this? Oh, Quentin Tarantino. Okay, I don't want to see any more of his film. Next time I'm visiting the same friends, hey, let's watch this film. It's called Jackie Brown. Okay, we'll watch that. Who made this? Oh, it's that Tarantino guy. That's it. I'm not watching any more Tarantino films. And to be fair, after that, I have seen Kill Bills 1 and 2, which I didn't mind as much as his other films. And then we finally had to do Pulp Fiction for this show. Didn't like it. Don't like the man. Don't like what he does in his films. I hate the brutality. I hate that he holds your face in it. And quite honestly, once I found out about the feet thing, I really was not too cool about that either. It's like, now I can't. It's like, I'm staring at the feet. I'm staring at the feet. They're in this frame. I have to stare at the feet because I know he's doing unspeakable things off the camera with the feet. Oh. You know he is. And also, he just
we
is
don't
like
kink
so
shame on this show.
You also just, he goes for these moments. He has to have these great moments, all these great moments. And I'm like, stop chasing the moment. Tell a fucking story. Ooh, I have to now beat myself. Tell a story. And I just do not enjoy his films at all. Okay. I stopped seeing them after Kill. Well, I tried to stop seeing them, but you made me watch Pulp Fiction. So, yeah, it's Quentin Tarantino. How about you, Max? Okay. Who is a director that you just were like, no.
I got to say, I jump on the Michael Bay train. I mean,
at least you know they're going to be fast.
Yeah, they're going to be fast, but they're also all going to blow up.
I mean, you can just hear him watching a film and cut and cut and cut. Yeah.
Yep. And, hey, who held that camera still for 8 seconds? I want that guy off the lot. I want his family dead.
Where's my monkey?
Yeah. Come on, take this monkey and fill it with meth and give it the camera.
Yeah. So Michael Bay seems to be the winner.
Exhausting. Yeah. And also not in a fun way.
No.
I mean, Michael Bay is one of the few directors who you just go, enough already, guy!
Oh, come on!
Yeah. But thank you all for your answers. They were most awesome.
They were. Some of them very surprising, too.
Yeah, it's a lot to think, given us a lot to think about, and neither of us enjoy that, so we do it as little as possible.
It makes the smoke come out of Max's hair.
Yeah, that's right. It makes my puzzler hurt. But we want more of them because we want you thinking. Let me ask you this. When you're in a bad mood, what movie or what sort of movie do you like to watch, if any, to take you out of it? And we will tell you the deep, dark secret that lurks beneath the waves of how to answer that question for the three of you who don't know at the end of the show.
Sounds
secret. Now, the facts. Budget. Oh, boy. $7 million.
Yeah.
Worldwide gross, $488 million. Almost half a $1 billion, and this is in 1975.
Cripes.
This still remains one of the most successful movies of all time.
And it's about to make a bunch more money, and, too.
Yes, a lot of people are seeing it in the re-release. This also explains why there was a Jaws 2, Jaws 3D, and Jaws the Revenge.
Yeah.
Which also explains why no one saw them.
Yeah.
This was only Spielberg's second theatrical movie ever. First one was the Goldie Hawn vehicle Sugarland Express.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I thought they were going to count Duel, but it's like that was movie.
From 1959 to 1973, all he did were TV shows and made-for-TV movies.
TV movie.
I made for TV, love you.
Well, to be fair, one of those was an episode of Columbo, and it was a really good episode.
And the movie Duel is fantastic.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's really good. It's amazing how you can make a truck so damn scary. And without sticking a Green Goblin mask on the front. Thank you, Stephen King.
Isn't that Dennis Weaver?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, McCloud!
This movie was nominated for 4 Oscars and won 3.
What are the 3, do you know?
Yep, best sound, best film editing, and best music. It lost out on best picture.
To what, do you know?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
Yeah, ooh. Kind of bad luck there, Steve.
Yeah, it's not like when Star Wars lost to Annie Hall or whatever it was.
When the composer, a kid named Johnny Williams, originally played the score for Spielberg, and particularly that dun dun dun, Spielberg laughed out loud and said, "That's really funny, John, really, but what did you have in mind? What did you really have in mind for the theme of Jaws?" And that Spielberg later stated that without Williams' score, the movie would only have been half as successful. Mm. And according to Williams, that's what jump-started his career.
Yeah. I mean, he'd done lots of stuff since Gilligan's Island. But I think that was his first, like, big cinematic score. Because people, like, that's when they would start selling the score. Like, you could buy the soundtrack of Jaws.
Mm-hmm. According to Spielberg himself, the prop arm in that early scene where they find Chrissy's remains, it looked too fake. So instead, they buried a female crew member in the sand with only her arm exposed.
Oh.
Yes, and then covered her with crabs.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I remember the first time I saw that, that freaked me out. According to the screenwriter Carl Gottlieb, Roy Scheider ad-libbed the line, "You're going to need a bigger boat."
Really?
Yep.
Yeah,
we'll just came out of him, and they're like, "We're keeping it." Speaking of ad-libs, Robert Shaw ad-libbed the entire poem of "Here Lies the Body of Mary Lee, died at the age of 103.
Huh.
After Spielberg prompted him to give Brody's wife on the dock a hard time. Asked later where he quoted it from because they were afraid they would have to get like a license for it and a release from the author. Shaw said that was unlikely because it was off an old grave marker in Ireland.
Oh.
Spielberg said when he first read Peter Benchley's novel, Jaws, he found himself rooting for the shark because the human characters were so unlikable.
Oh. You've read the book, haven't you?
I have. He's not wrong. Almost everyone in that is a jerk, even Brody.
Oh.
The book, I will get to this, the book is a lot more complicated, and I don't think it needed to be. Though respected as an actor, Robert Shaw was a problem.
Really? Why? I can't imagine why.
He was too fond of the drink, as they say.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Shocked and surprised.
Now, Roy Scheider, at interviews, has described him as a perfect gentleman when he was sober. All he needed was one drink, and then he turned into a competitive son of a bitch.
Wow.
According to Carl Gottlieb, Shaw was having a drink between takes and announced, "I wish I could quit drinking." To the absolute shock of the rest of the crew, Richard Dreyfuss grabbed Shaw's glass and threw it into the ocean.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. For the rest of the shoot, Shaw was bullying Dreyfuss all over the place, offering him $1,000 to climb the 70-foot mast and jump into the ocean.
Wow.
Calling Dreyfuss a coward when he refused. On one day, Shaw sprayed him down with a fire hose, or a fire extinguisher, depending who you believe, causing an enraged Dreyfuss to storm off, saying, "That's it. I don't want to work with you anymore. Go bleep yourself."
Huh.
When it came time to shoot the famous USS Indianapolis scene, Shaw tried to do the monologue while drunk, because the men were drinking, and nothing in the entire take could be used. A remorseful Shaw called Spielberg late that night and said, "Can I please have another try?" And the next day he did it in one take. And that is one of the most amazing sequences in the movie.
We'll probably get back to that.
Probably. Initially, Shaw and Dreyfuss hated each other.
Luckily, it got better.
Yeah, it actually did.
Did it?
Dreyfuss later described Shaw as he was the largest personality I've ever met on this earth. Shaw invited Dreyfuss to act with him on stage, telling Dreyfuss, "I'll play Claudius to your Hamlet if you play the fool to my Lear." Dreyfuss agreed to it, but he said he'd only do it after 10 years, so his acting skills could get closer to those of Shaw's.
Wow.
Shaw agreed, but he died too early. Those would have been some incredible shows to see.
Dang.
I bet nobody knows the name of the mechanical shark. It took so long to dig this up.
Bruce.
I'm going home.
You are home.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Is Bruce named after Steven Spielberg's lawyer? Ouch.
Yep. That I did not know.
Yeah. There were three mechanical Bruces.
And they all worked
Bruce
so well.
Bruce, and myself were made each with specialized functions. One shark was open on the right side, one was open on the left, and the third was fully skinned. Each shark cost about $250,000. Bruce has a total of 4 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
Now, despite reports to the contrary, Bruce was actually tested in water before it arrived on Martha's Vineyard and worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
However, the tests were done in the non-salt water tank at Universal.
Oh, dear.
And once it went in the actual ocean water, the salt wreaked havoc with everything.
I bet it did.
Spielberg was not the first choice to direct this movie. It was going to be the legendary Dick Richards.
Oh, huh?
Yeah, him. That guy.
Remember?
Yeah. He was fired after a meeting with producers and studio execs. One meeting. Because in the meeting, he said that his opening shot would have the camera come out of the water to show the town. Then the whale would come out of the water.
Uh-oh.
The producer said they were not making Moby Dick, and they didn't want to work with someone who didn't know the difference between a whale and a shark.
Gee, why?
Amity Island is, of course, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts.
What?
Primarily because even 12 miles out to sea, the sandy bottom is only 30 feet down.
Wow.
So a mechanical shark could work.
Oh.
Residents, actual residents, were paid $64 to scream and run across the beach as extras.
Yay!
That's why if you look closely, some of them are laughing.
Shh.
During the production, or pre-production, excuse me, Spielberg brought out his friends, Martin Scorsese, George Lucas, and John Milius, to the effect shop where the 25-foot-long Bruce shark was being constructed. Lucas said, "If you can get half of this on film, you'll be the biggest head of all time."
What the hell was that?
That's my flawless George Lucas impression. Lucas stuck his head in the shark's mouth to see how it worked, and as a joke, Milius and Spielberg stuck to the controls and made the jaws clamp down on Lucas's head. Unfortunately, and rather prophetically, considering the technical difficulties they'd have, the shark malfunctioned and Lucas got stuck in the mouth of the shark.
And to this day, that's where he is.
Yeah. When Spielberg and Milius were finally able to free him, the three men ran out of the workshop because, as Milius later said, "We knew we'd broken something expensive."
Well, they wouldn't be the last one, so.
The average tourist population of Martha's Vineyard before the film was released was about 5,000 people.
Uh-oh.
After it came out, it went up to 15,000.
Not a big place.
Yeah, no.
I wonder where they put them all.
Author Peter Benchley, who shows up as the newscaster,
yeah,
was thrown off the set after objecting to the climax of the film. He was also fired for weighing the story down with too many subplots involving romance and mafia intrigue.
Mafia intrigue?
Oh, yeah. Yes, the mob has an influence. It gets really confusing. Oh, yeah, and Hooper and Brody's wife have an affair.
Okay. That makes sense.
Wow. Uh-huh. The blowing up of the shark was scheduled for the last day of the shoot, sensibly. Four cameras were trained on it. Spielberg, however, wasn't there. He decided that before the crew had a chance to do any kind of prank on him to mark the end of principal photography, he would just leave.
Oh.
He and Richard Dreyfuss were on a plane to Boston when the actor turned to him and asked how the final shot went. Spielberg just looked at him, smiled, and said, "They're shooting it right now," and Dreyfuss just went into hysterics. He was just cracking up.
Luckily, it went fine.
Yep. Quint's name comes from the Latin word for fifth. Quint is the fifth person killed by the shark.
Oh, see, I thought it was because he drinks a fifth before every shot.
That too. By the way, if at some point Brody's kids, Michael and Sean, sound a little familiar, it's because some of their voices, their outdoor scenes, were voice dubbed by June Foray.
Oh, God. Oh, what's up, Bullwinkle?
Mm-hmm. Quint's mannerisms were based on a guy named Craig Kingsbury, a local eccentric farmer. You can see Kingsbury in this movie as Ben Gardner, whose head is later found underwater, but he's the one, "They're going to be sorry when their mothers met their fathers."
Mm.
He was originally hired just to show the local dialect to Robert Shaw. And he was hired to chat with Shaw.
To ignore it.
Yes. He went on and was like telling him stories about sharks and shark fishing. A PA recorded everything and some bits made it into the script.
Oh, neat.
You know, especially even like the line, "Not like chasing no tommy cod or bluegill in a pond."
Huh.
There is a ton
yeah.
of other stuff. Do you have anything you wanted to throw in?
No, no, no. I knew this was going to be an exceedingly big... I mean, they just yeah. released a documentary on it, which, to be fair, we don't usually endorse anything like this, but the documentary, which I think is both on Nat Geo or Disney, depending on which one you have, is a really cool documentary about the making of this film. So take a look at that. And honestly, before we get to the end, if you've never seen Jaws, or if you've only seen it on a small screen and you have any liking for it, go out and see it. Now, whether we liked it, that's a different story. But
oh, yeah. Yeah. Big suspense here.
But speaking of different stories, could you tell us a story of Jaws? The one without the mob, please.
Oh, right, right.
The mob?
Hello, children. Hello. Once upon a time, there was a big, happy Carcharodon carcharias, or great white shark,
ooh.
Who loved to swim and eat and make little sharks.
Ooh.
He swam and swam in the ocean until one day he found a big island with lots of funny pink monkeys living on it. The shark wondered if the pink monkeys would be friends with him and tried to introduce himself to some of the silly monkeys. But they were too squishy and silly and made funny loud noises when the shark came to hug them with his mouth. What was a poor shark to do? Worse, the pink monkeys got all angry and upset and shouty, and some of them said they shouldn't go in the water to play with the nice sharky anymore. Ooh, mean monkeys! But the king of the monkeys, who wore a shiny striped suit, said, "No, no, the shark just wants to be friends. We should all go in the water and let him hug us. Yay, king of the monkeys!" But the mean chief monkey did not like this idea at all, and he got the other monkeys so upset that they hired Grouchy Monkey and his ugly boat to go and make the shark go away. So mean. Even worse, they hired a nerdy monkey and brought along the chief monkey, so the three monkeys all ganged up on poor Sharky. They went out in their big dumb boat and chased the poor confused shark around, sticking sharp things in him, and then tying hard yellow balloons to the sharp things just to be mean to the shark.
Uh-huh.
Boo, monkeys! Poor Sharky had no choice but to hug the Grouchy Monkey with his mouth really hard so the Grouchy Monkey would know just how much he had hurt Sharky's feelings with the hard balloons. But then evil Chief Monkey offered Sharky some candy to eat, but it was really a big boomy thing that blew up and gave Sharky an awful headache. Ouchie! So Sharky sank away and never tried to play with the mean pink monkeys again. So remember, kids, the real treasure is the friends you make along the way.
The film.
You are an absolute loon.
I like my interpretation.
I'm sure you do. At least we don't have to worry about you giving away any spoilers.
But now they know that there's a king monkey and a chief monkey. But first, let us talk about the cast.
Well, actually, no, first, real quick, because I often ask this. Did you see this when it came out? You were technically old enough. I was not.
I did. I remember I saw it at the theater near my house. I went to like a matinee because so there weren't that many people in there. But I remember feeling the entire row of seats I was in slam backwards when there was a jump scare, or like particularly like when the head rolls out of the boat,
which
I still maintain is the scariest moment in that show.
Yeah.
And people were just throwing themselves back in their seats.
I didn't see it because I was 10.
You didn't, okay.
Luckily my parents loved me and didn't let me go to the movie, not that I wanted to see it. So it was a thing, and we'll get back to that part.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't remember the first time I actually sat through Jaws. I want to say it was decades after it came out. But
I didn't want to go in any body of water for almost a year.
Wait, you didn't rush right from the theater to the beach?
Nope. Funny that.
Amazing. But yeah, so let's get to the cast.
Yeah. Roy Scheider as Brody. Roy Scheider was not a major name. He had done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But this really was what put him on the map.
I think he wasn't the co-star, if you want to put it that way, of The French Connection? I think he was.
Yeah, he is in that. Yep.
Roy Scheider is an actor that I have never understood why didn't go further. I really like Roy Scheider. And yes, I looked it up for fun. He got $400,000 for this film. It was the biggest payout he ever got. That was it.
Wow.
I really like him. He brings a really interesting side to this. He's definitely the middleman between Quint and Hooper, right?
Yeah.
So somebody,
he's more of the everyman.
He's not an Islander. And there's talk about that during the film about, yo, you're only an Islander if you were born here. He is somebody who's trying to escape the violence of New York City as a policeman. And oops.
It followed him.
So you get somebody who's got that street smarts, that sense in this community that doesn't know what to do with it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really like Roy Scheider in this part. He's not the main character. We'll get to who that is in about 10 seconds. But he does his part very, very well, and he's the guy you're rooting for, quite honestly.
Yep.
So, and you can tell he's a good dad, too. I always like it when we've got a good dad, which is nice. Especially the part where he's like, I don't want the boys to get out of the boat. We're just by the dock. No, get out of the boat. And mom's like, oh, honey. And then she looks at the newspaper and she's like, get out of the boat!
So she sees the picture of a shark headbutting his way into a longboat.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like Roy Scheider. And again, I don't know why. C-Lab 2020, whatever. No, it was Sequest. That's right. I don't know why he was not Blue a bigger Thunder. Name. But I liked Roy Scheider. I really did. Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw. Robert, no scenery left unchewed Shaw.
But let's face it, his name's on top for a reason.
Yeah. He was the name.
I only know him from one other film, and that film was From Russia with Love.
You didn't know? You never saw The Sting?
Oh, I forgot he was the Irish cop in The Sting. That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Man for All Seasons. He's Henry VIII.
Nope. But dear gods, I mean, if you remember one character from this film, it's going to be Quint. If you're going to parody one character from this film, it's going to, well, to be fair, it's going to be Quint or the shark. Candy Grin. So. Yes, I don't know where he's supposed to be from, because it certainly isn't Amity /Martha Vineyard, but that's okay. Sort
of by way of County Cork.
Kinda, yeah. But, dear gods, talk about a character with depth. The first time he shows up, and I don't know about the sound system in the theater that when you saw this recently, but the sound system in my theater was too good because that damn fingernails in the blackboard worked just fine. But he shows up and he's like, hey, here's the deal. And then he leaves. And even though the film doesn't follow him, I think the audience is like, could we bring that guy back? I think he has a good idea. Let's get him.
Just the way he closes out. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, Chief, ladies and gentlemen. It's like, you might as well call them all, you know, sons of bitches. Like, ladies and gentlemen sounds like the worst thing he could call anybody.
The best part, I think, though, is when we find out he's wrong.
Yeah.
Because, to be fair, he gets et and the other two don't. Spoiler, it's a 50-year-old film. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I like that point when he finally turns to Hooper and says, all right, what can you do? Because he's like,
that's when you know he's desperate. Yep. Yeah, and the back and forth between Quint and Hooper is terrific, which brings us to, of course, Hooper, Richard Dreyfuss. Damn you! Yes, I'm Richard Dreyfuss, damn it! I deliver every line the same way in every movie!
I don't know, you know what? I saw this, and I'm like, you know, I miss Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard, that's the thing. Richard Dreyfuss was one of those actors, he tended to play things the same way, but he was really good at picking parts where he worked. It's like Jack Nicholson.
Or plays Jack Nicholson. Ford, or
Humphrey Bogart. Yeah, it's picking the right part.
Yeah.
And he does it. I remember this in The Goodbye Girl. It's like, you know, I can see elements of both characters, but they're completely different.
He was actually really toned down for Mr. Holland's Opus, which is, I think, the last film I saw him in. So he's really good in this. I actually really love the scene where he's been made fun of one too many times by either Robert Shaw or Quint. It's hard to tell. And he just starts making faces at the camera.
Yep. He starts Don't think I can take this abuse much longer.
W.C. Fields is not in this film. Oh, is that who he was doing? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, couldn't tell.
That was also, by the way, was improv'd.
Isn't it sad that you do a better W.C. Fields than Richard Dreyfuss?
Thank you, boy. Thank you. Get away from me now.
You bother me. Yeah, no, I like him in this. Not a huge part, but I do like him in this, and... You know, I would really like him in Close Encounters in a couple of years after this. So,
and the chemistry between him and Brody is terrific.
Yeah, the chemistry between Quint and Brody, because Quint is obviously like, look, I respect you. I know you've seen some stuff.
You are the only one on this island I respect. You can tell
because you tried to close the beaches.
Yeah, you were the only one who was smart enough to do that.
Yeah. The three characters together, the chemistry is great.
Oh, yeah.
And it leads to the one of the best scenes in the film, but we'll get back to that.
Yeah. Oh, I know what that is. Yep. Yeah. We got Lorraine Gray as Ellen Brody.
Lorraine Gary, very small I think part. It's Lorraine Gary.
Gary, excuse me. I know, but for some reason, it's always been stuck in my head as Elaine Gray. Oh. I don't know why. But yeah, Elaine Gary, she's terrific, but she doesn't have much to do.
No. No.
No.
So, what she's... Murray Hamilton as Vaughn is perfect.
Oh, he is. You just loathe him from the first moment.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to.
And it's like, oh, you have a car dealership too, don't you? Because that's, you're mayor and car dealer. Well, I don't know if he actually has one, but...
You dress like Herb Tarlick from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah. He's been in, let's see... Everything. He is one of those character actors. He mostly did TV, but he is relentless in his... He says he's doing it for the good of the island, which I think it's two things. I think it's A, he wants the money, and B, he wants to stay mayor, which I'm guessing up till now hasn't that been that big a deal, but it's a nice little seat of power.
Yeah.
And that little part where he goes crazy at the end, kind of.
He's broken.
Well, he knows they're all going to blame him, as they should.
As they should, but he also, my kids were on that beach too.
Yeah.
He's also realizing what, it's the enormity of his screw up is hitting him.
Yeah. But also, he didn't ask his kids to go in the water first, just saying. So, quite honestly, after that, I mean,
everyone's just bit parts.
Except, for Lee Fierro.
Ooh, Mrs. Kittner,
one of the other biggest scenes of the film. There is a story, apparently, the kid who played Alex Kittner was working...
Jeffrey Voorhees.
Yeah, he was working in a restaurant at some point much later in his life, in his 20s or 30s, I don't remember which. And she came in, and he came over, he recognized her, and he came over, and apparently they got on like best pals.
Well, she noticed that on the menu, there's an Alex Kittner sandwich.
Okay.
And she mentioned it to the waiter, and then he came running out like, oh my God, because they hadn't seen each other since the original shoot.
She doesn't have a huge part. It's one of the smaller parts, but it is one of the most powerful scenes of the film. Ooh. She comes up, obviously, after she's buried her son, who's been et, and she comes right up to Brody, and she basically says, you knew, you send people into the beach, into the waters, and you knew, and she slaps him, and... Man, and he just stands there stunned because what else can he do?
Apparently, it took him 17 takes to get the slap right because she couldn't do a fake slap. She wasn't an actor. She was one of the locals.
Really?
Yeah, they hired her because she had the right look. And apparently, at one point, she ended up hitting him so hard she knocked his glasses off.
Well, good for her. And she's a standout amongst a lot of other people that are
And she only has about four lines, but she really... She is utterly memorable.
Yeah.
The kids who play Brody's kids, Chris Ribello and Jay Mello, they're fine. They don't do much, but they're fine.
They're kids. They make good kids or chum. Yep. Ooh. neither of them gets eaten.
No.
It's all very believable, and it's interesting. I guess Quint Robert Shaw is a big name, I guess, but he's not a household name.
Yeah. And, no, he was very well known, though.
But not, he's not like, we're not talking again, Gene Hackman or something like that.
No.
And I think that actually works much better with this film. I don't think we want a big Hollywood name in this film. Somebody like Gene Hackman, I think, would have been fine, because Gene Hackman is not, he's not going to Harrison Ford all over the place, right? He's not a movie star. He does his thing. He is a really good, solid actor. And then he doesn't do any of the... celebrity stuff. Apparently Hackman was never into that stuff. But otherwise, this does not need to be a big star vehicle. We don't need some big name to be in this film.
No, no.
So, yeah, good solid cast.
Yep, terrific cast.
So, this was a summer blockbuster, or I should say the summer blockbuster, which is the reason we're doing this. People didn't go to the movies quite... I mean, The Sting was after or before?
I think it was before.
I think it was, too. I think it was 74. The Sting was a big film at the time. It was another film that everybody parodied and everybody knew about. I mean, it's Redford and Newman, too. So it's like, we just love them in Butch Cassidy, so we're going to love them in this. But it... $100 million.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It is
this
so.
This blew everything else out of the water.
Literally. I don't think that today's moviegoers understand how ubiquitous this film was. Even if you
except it wasn't. It wasn't. It never showed on more than 1,000 screens when it came out.
No, but everybody knew about it. It was parodied.
Mad Magazine, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, a brand new show called Saturday Night Live. If you went into the grocery store, those little gumball machines had knockoff Jaws shark stickers in them. Jaws t-shirts, everything. There were merchant Jaws beach towels. Everywhere you went, there was Jaws something.
Everyone was going around. If there was any kind of suspense about anything, everyone's going, dun-dun, dun-dun. People who've never seen the movie know those two notes on the cello.
The opening of Airplane, the tail fin of the plane is going through the clouds and they start playing. Oh, God,
it is part of the, I hate the word, it's part of the zeitgeist. It's part of our collective consciousness. Everyone knows it. People who've never seen the movie know it.
But let's face it, it's a 70s film, and that can carry some baggage, which we may get back to at the end of the show. But
let's talk about the clothes, but
Most of it's beachwear. It's not that big a deal. My favorite part is, you shot with locals. I know that accent. Especially this one guy. I can't remember if it's the guy who dies or not, but he's on the boat, and I think it is the guy whose head we find later, and he's sitting there. Oh, it's not like fishing for blah, 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 blah. It's like, yep, there's that thick Martha's Vineyard Boston accent. Yeah.
Or Harry, the guy we know about you, Chief. You don't go in the water.
Yeah.
Just that some bad hat, Harry.
Yeah. If you're from New England, you knew where it was being filmed. It was nice that it was filmed there and not in California, because it would have been a totally different vibe. So
it is also fun when Roy Scheider is trying to talk like he's local. You don't say yard, you're supposed to say yard. Oh, sorry, they're in the yard, not too far from the car.
Thus proving...
How's that?
That doing a Boston accent is harder than it sounds.
It's really hard. How's that? Like you're from New York.
Funny thing about this movie being a blockbuster, it is not the kind of movie that we would think of as being a blockbuster today. In a lot of ways, I think of this as a character film.
It really is about the people. It's also very small scale. Yeah. The world isn't in danger. It's this little beach community.
Yeah.
This little town. One of the differences between Martha's Vineyard and Amity Island is Amity Island clearly has one town.
Right.
Martha's Vineyard has like six.
All of them named Kennedy something. Kennedy Burg, yes, Kennedyville, yeah. Kennedy Town.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Some of them are named Cabotville, Lodgeville.
Yeah.
Cabot Lodgeville.
Cabot Cove. Oops, wait, wrong coast.
Wait a minute.
It isn't.
Go there, you'll get... No,
that's
you don't want to go there. You'll get murdered.
I keep forgetting that Cabot Cove is supposed to be in Maine when it's so obviously not. But
yeah, very clear. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. It is. And it's like, you know, it's eventually three guys on a boat after a fish. Like, that is not blockbuster material. Blockbuster is spaceship shooting a giant space station.
Oh, no. Space monkeys.
Yeah. Or a giant UFO coming in, you know, us meeting, you know, some big event where we're meeting aliens for the first time. Yeah. Stuff like that. Like, that's blockbuster material. And to be fair, I don't remember what it was that grabbed people about this film, but it grabbed them.
It did.
Pacing. Interestingly, again, for a blockbuster, I think the pacing is fairly slow, not in a bad way.
It's leisurely. Yeah. No, it's, But we're not, it's not like boom, 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 excitement, excitement. There's a lot of fairly mundane stuff. There's a lot of reaction time.
Yeah.
There are conversations that go on for a while. No, no, that's very true.
There's also some fake stuff. Like we think things are going to happen. Like the one time when the kids have a fake fin and they come up and I love they're obviously brothers and one points the other. He made me do it. And it's like, yeah. You literally almost just got shot in the head. So
I'm like, these kids, let's see, it's been 50 years. I wonder if these kids are still grounded.
Probably.
They should be.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and some of it, the stuff that you don't realize you were waiting for. When the shark is in the pond,
yeah,
where Brody's son is, and you just see from the shark's perspective, he swims right by the kid, and they're pulling him out of the water, and they show a close-up of the kid's legs.
Yeah.
And you realize, the first time I saw it, I didn't realize, oh, God, I really was worried that the shark had taken a piece of him.
Yeah. And I got to say, the kid's look of terror, really well done. Oh, he really convincing. Looked like somebody who was about to go into shock, which is what happened.
I assume Robert Shaw was standing on the beach, you know, pointing at him, waving a bottle of whiskey, going, ah!
Hey, you're next. Okay. So we said earlier, this is a 70s film, and that can, mm-hmm. again, pacing is one of the things. One of the others is special effects. Let's talk about Bruce.
Okay.
For the most part, Bruce works fine. And when Bruce first pops up out of the water at Chief Brody, they are very smart. It is not a long shot, and we don't see him coming either. And I think that, honestly, it's Roy Scheider selling this holy crap moment that really works for
that. That startled the hell out of me in the theater because there's no music sting initially.
No.
It's just totally, he's like, chum some of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not even looking. We see the shark come up.
He says, I'll be your chum. Okay.
Yeah.
But, and the scenes of him swimming around the boat, very effective, very effective. Oh, that's a 20-footer. 25.
Five. 3 tons on him.
It's like, wait, that's a 6,000-pound fish? We need a bigger island. Can we go back, please?
Can we get an aircraft carrier, please?
And when it's trying to break through the hull with something we know it can do, because there was a newspaper story about it. But there's a scene where, how to put this nicely, the fish leaps onto the boat.
Ah, yes.
And
it is very clearly there's somebody standing under it going, hop!
Well, it's probably like some sort of crane or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, even the action doesn't say, a shark would do that to me. And I think that particular shot doesn't work. I also do kind of question the scene where it's going after Quint and it's just basically going, it's like, okay. I will say there was a directorial choice that I think was very, very smart, especially for a 27-year-old Steven Spielberg. Yeah. And that was, the shark doesn't make any noises. Now, you may say, well, of course, sharks don't make noise anyway.
But it doesn't stop people.
Oh, how many times have we heard rats or mice squeaking when, if you've ever met one, I have never heard, I've owned mice. They have never squeaked unless you were like squeezing them and they were hurt. They don't just squeak. Or bats, you can't hear their noises. You could easily have made a monster sound, or there could have been a sting of dun 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 right when the shark is eating Quint, and there isn't.
Nope. The soundtrack in this is very sparse. There are long periods where there's no background music.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And that makes when it comes out a lot more effective.
Well, there's one point of the music I'm just like, huh. And that's after they've put the first barrel, maybe even the second barrel, into the shark, and it's swimming away, and the ship's going after it, and there's this sort of upbeat, happy, we're at sea music, and I'm like, why are you so happy? They're about to get et, or I don't know.
They don't know that. You know, they're like, hey, look, we succeeded. We got the barrels on him, and now we're just doing a nice chase, and where did he go?
Yeah. Yeah.
And eventually, we come to what is the best sequence, I think, in the movie.
Well, we talked about the other one, which is Mrs. Kittner, which was a great... It's a slap in the face for the audience, too.
Probably the most dramatic. I think the one that just draws you in completely is them sitting around the table. Quint and Hooper start showing each other their scars.
Yeah.
And I love the bit where I didn't understand it when I was a kid.
Oh,
but when Roy Scheider lifts up his shirt and looks at his and oh, that's an appendectomy scar. You can't show, that doesn't count.
Yeah, well, that's why he puts his shirt down and doesn't say anything.
Yeah, he was smart there, but it's like, okay, that's a great insight into him. It's like he wants to participate, but he's not going to be stupid about it.
Yeah.
And then we get Shaw's speech about the Indianapolis.
Yep. Dear God.
Oh, my God. All of which, by the way, is true.
Yeah.
All of it. Delivered the atomic bomb. It sank. 1,100 men went in the water. A little over 300 came back out. They were not, however, all eaten by sharks. Some of them died from complications of drinking seawater. Some of them went crazy from drinking seawater and had to be put down by the others.
Ugh,
but
way down.
A lot of them were eaten by the sharks.
Well, but that story also just really wraps up the whole plot, right? Because why is Quint the way he is? Because he's been living with this ever since, and that's why he keeps going after sharks, and we see his little workshop where he's boiling shark jaws and has them hanging up, and you realize that it won't matter how many he hangs up, they will never fill that hole. And of course, it's slightly ironic that of the three, he's the one who gets eaten. Like, he's lasted this long and he's finally taken down by the thing that he's been basically setting his life against ever since.
I do like that line, you know, I'll never put on a life jacket.
Yeah.
Like, nope, I'd rather drown right away than wait.
Yeah.
Or get eaten. And then the way they move, go into it and they start, you know, he starts singing that creepy farewell and adieu, you fair Spanish ladies. That is basically his theme song. And then Dreyfus turns it into show me the way to go home and they all sing together.
Yeah.
I think that is such a touching moment.
It is, but it's also kind of dumb. They have told us a number of times this shark is a night feeder. Why are you getting drunk at night? This seems like a bad idea. And lo and behold, it is.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I hate to say this, we are running out of time because we're 57 minutes into this show.
Oh, okay.
So if you have any one last note you want to get to before we...
Nope. I think we're good.
Because it's Jaws. Is it any good? Da-dun, da-dun. Da-dun.
The finish.
So Max, when was the last time you actually sat and watched Jaws? All the way through.
Oh, boy. Oh, all the way through.
Yeah.
God, it's been years.
No in the background. No skipping
scenes. I've come across it. I don't know. It's been like 20 years probably since I watched the whole thing. And I don't think I've seen it on the big screen since it first came out.
Now, when you were a kid, you said it scared the poop out of you.
Yes, it did.
And to be fair, you were a youngster. Do you remember if you liked the film?
Oh, I did. I remember I was absolutely enthralled.
Did you become into sharks for a while? Or
I was a little bit into sharks. Mostly I was, how do I stay as far away from them as possible?
I'm going to go with Ohio.
Yeah. I was like, can we move inland a lot?
Yeah.
Many people point out that is one of the controversies of this movie. This movie has done terrible things for sharks, basically.
That's why we have Shark Week.
And it's not true.
No.
A lot of this stuff in this is absolute nonsense. Sharks, first off, they don't go looking for vengeance. which, by the way, is a theme in the following three movies.
Yeah.
They almost never eat humans. They don't like us. We're at the top of the food chain. The higher up the food chain you go, the worse the meat is.
Mm.
They attack us because they think we're seals.
Yeah.
You know. Deadly creatures. Atne ute aitbre, however.
Yeah. I mean, they'll still nibble if they get a chance.
Even Peter Benchley said, because he didn't know that much about them, he said, I wouldn't have done this. I'm really sorry I wrote this book. I think it was terrible because it caused a massive drop in the shark populations.
Yeah.
Around this country and around the world.
Mm. Taking that into account, account that it scared the crap out of you when you were a kid, and the fact that it's a 70s film, it's 50 years old. You went and saw it in the theater, I assume, right?
Yep, I did.
What did you think this time around?
Okay, it's funny. I noticed it much more the quality of the movie. The cinematography is so good, and the editing is so tight, it's not scary to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, I have seen this movie in pieces so many times. I know where all the scares are. I know what's going to happen. I did, however, twitch when Ben Gardner's head rolls out of the hole in the boat. That, I maintain, is the scariest sequence. And it's not because of the shark or even the head. It's because you're in that water and it's dark and it's New England water, meaning you can't see more than about 10 feet, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not like you're in the Caribbean where you can see for miles. Like, you don't know what's out there.
Also, they left out the part where it's really cold.
Yes, it's freezing. So it's not as scary, but I can appreciate it more as how well it's made. What about you? You'd seen it. You knew this movie.
Even if you hadn't seen it, you knew the movie. Because little clips of it would show up in clip shows. It shows on Hollywood. The scene with the three of them in the boat at night is one of those scenes that it's just classic. I actually went with my buddy the Weasel. Hey, Weasel. And he's much younger. And he said he'd actually seen it, which surprised me. I didn't think that it was a film he would look for. Our theater was surprisingly full on a Tuesday night. There was a lot of people there. I mean, we're not talking hundreds of people, but it's a Tuesday night for a 50-year-old film. And people were sitting there through the credits. I just didn't have the heart to say, there's no end credit scene. We won't do this for another 45 years. So just, you can go home now. I think it makes me miss films crafted as well as this.
Yeah.
Because while it's languidly paced, while there is not as much action as you think there is, it's always interesting. And Spielberg does something we don't tend to do much anymore, except for Robert Altman. And that is, you'll have multiple characters talking at the same time. The nice thing is you can hear them and you can decide what you're going to listen to. But the people in the background are saying interesting stuff and you can pay attention to that and find out more of what's going on.
Yeah.
I think we benefit from not having a big named actor strutting about trying to do things their way, except for Robert Shaw, who wants to do things the drunk way.
Yep.
But he's so good, you don't care. I think it holds up. I think it's not a film for today's audiences with the pacing. That being said, there was a bunch of people that most of them were older. It is not what you expect for a blockbuster. It's not all action-y. It's not that gory, all things considered. In fact, one of the gory scenes is almost kind of funny when the leg falls down to the bottom of the ocean. It's kind of funny in a weird way. It's not, but it is. So I think it holds up well. It shows that the Spielberg kid might actually know something.
Could be.
And it's arguable. A lot of people have said this. This actually might be his best film.
I think you could make a case for that. I'd have to think about it.
I really like Close Encounters. I like that film a lot. Another film that is not all action-y and is also languidly paced, and you get to know the characters really well, but I really like that. I liked it in 77. I saw that film many times in the theater. So, closing out this series, there's a reason that people went to see this, and it had nothing to do with what blockbusters would become.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance it's also a great print. They did a really, and Mr. Spielberg will come out and thank you personally. Also,
big 4K restoration is gorgeous.
I had to notice something that made me very sad. I don't know about you. The previews I saw before this film, all but two of them were for re-releases of films that we've already seen. It's like, oh, you remember Back to the Future? You like Back to the Future. And there was another one, and there was three of them that they're like, yeah, we've seen this. And they weren't like Back to the Future, let's face it. How many times have we seen that? Many times. Do I need to see that on a big screen? No. I probably will not go. And I forget what there was another film, too. It's just like, that was a film I saw. I don't need... Jaws... different story. I think this does benefit being seen in a big screen.
I think it definitely does.
So Hollywood can't even be bothered to remake itself now. It's just going into reruns.
Well, I noticed that like this summer, the re-releases have had some of the biggest box office.
I know. Which...
yeah. You know, maybe learn something, Hollywood.
Yeah. Your current movies stink. We don't want to see those. We only want to see stuff we've seen 300 times before. So part of it's our fault, but...
yeah.
You know what else is our fault? The poll question. Max, would you go over the poll question and how people can answer it again, please? Hey, it's the best metaphor I've had in a long time.
Entirely your fault. We want to know, when you're in a bad mood... what movie or what sort of movie, if you don't have a specific one, do you like to watch to take you out of it? And you can tell us by writing a message on some waterproof fish and waterproof paint.
Or you could just email us.
And we'll...
email.
Boring.
Hey, all the floundergrams are going to you, pal. You deal with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm making a nice soup out of them. Yep, you can floundergram us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can also go to our website, www.maxmikemovies.com, and leave a comment. We're also on the various fishy social medias.
There's no fishy social media.
There are so many fishy social. We're on
Facebook.
And
Blue Sky,
of course,
Mastodon. No. I actually want people to find them. Stop making up new names for things.
And under them, we're all Max Mike Movies Fish. And of course, you can use your shellophone to call us, to call our hotline. As Blurp and Slurp are standing by to take your calls.
Hey, I'm Big Daddy. Okay.
617-398-7266. That's 617-398-7266. Do it today. But now we return. We go back in time to our existing series that we have interrupted, and that is Directors in Short Pants.
Mm.
What short-panted director are we going to check out next week, Mike?
Well, interestingly, this director showed up in the list of least favorite director answers for this week's poll question.
Oh, dear.
That being said...
Michael Bay, we're doing Michael Bay, right?
We are absolutely not doing Michael Bay. I will go back to Phil Tucker before I do Michael Bay. Heck, I'd even go back to Ed Wood. This is a director that is generally well-liked. One of our listeners, or I should say answerers, did not care for this person. And it is a film that I have never seen. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I would like to take another look at Wes Anderson. And his first film was a movie called Bottle Rocket.
I do not know that one. Nothing
about this film. I have seen many other Wes Anderson films. I don't think I've disliked any of them. I like some better than others. He is a flavor, though. So if you don't like Strawberry Quick, you're not going to like Wes Anderson. Although in the earlier films, like with Rushmore, he wasn't so Wes Anderson-y as he is now.
No, he was more proto-Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
He now has sloughed off the cocoon and emerged as a beautiful Wes Anderson fly.
Sure. So next week, come and join us as we shoot off a bottle rocket on Max Mike Movies.
Full of fish.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.